Welcome to episode 3 of Speak Beastie for January 17th, 2016. I'm Shannon Mickelson.
I'm Ariel Taransky.
I'm Aaron Fantastapants.
And I'm Megan Kelly, this week's rotating host.
Hi, Megan. Tell us a little bit about yourself.
Well, I'm from Pittsburgh. I'm a Gryffindor. And I do creative social media for MuggleNet. And in my Muggle life, I do digital marketing.
Awesome. Happy to have you
Gryffindor.
Here.
Gryffindor!
Woo! Thanks for having me.
So, when we plan the days to record, there really is no way of knowing what will happen on that day. And I think it's safe to assume that no one here was prepared for this. It's with a heavy heart that I say Alan Rickman has passed away. While this isn't Fantastic Beasts news, I know I speak for everyone here when I say it's important to acknowledge this. Not only did he bring to life one of the most complex and morally gray characters, but he also managed to portray so many beloved characters over the years. All of the kind words from his co-stars in the Potter films alone are a wonderful display of what kind of man he was as well. I now ask that we honor this man, his many accomplishments and talents, and keep his family and friends in your thoughts as we have a moment of silence. And raise our wands to our Professor Snape. Thank you, Alan Rickman, for everything.
Whew. Well said, Ariel.
Yeah, well said.
Good job.
I absolutely have, like, no idea where to go from there. Like, how to go from there, to be honest.
Yeah. One of my favorite quotes that I saw online from him today was how important stories are and how they can sort of help us cope with things in life. And so, you know, with all of that, we can focus on the future, Fantastic Beasts, all these great things that are going to happen, and remember him for all of the great work that he did with Harry Potter.
Yes.
Yes.
Well, since unfortunately, the show and life must now go on without him, let us try to focus on the good and the future. That being said, there was actually a little bit of good to come out of today. Eddie Redmayne actually was nominated for an Oscar for his portrayal in The Danish Girl.
Yay. Mm-hmm.
Yay.
And he recently, yeah, it's really, really awesome. And he recently celebrated a birthday. So things are looking pretty good for Eddie.
He's 34.
34, really?
He looks very good for his age.
He looks like he could be 17.
Yeah.
Creepy.
I mean that in a very complimentary way, of course.
He's a little bit older than Newt, but
yeah. But I think as far as casting goes, sometimes they do like weird sort of age gaps, and I'd say this one's pretty good. Like, he could eventually get to the point where he is 34, so it's not so bad. Well, I guess he'd be about 35, 36.
Yeah.
If we do a time jump.
And also look at, you know, if you look at High School Musical and stuff where there are like 25-year-olds playing like teenage, you know, high school students, like Hollywood isn't really that concerned with age.
Yeah.
Has anyone actually seen The Danish Girl?
No.
No, but I really want to.
No, I haven't had a chance, which is
I'm
a shame.
Interested.
Yes. I've heard a lot of good things about it. I have yet to hear one negative review or even passing comment about it, so that makes me pretty excited, especially that our Newt is yet again nominated for an Oscar.
Yeah,
which just proves his acting chops, so that's really exciting.
Even just the pictures are amazing.
Oh yes, and it's great that we recently got two more pictures that show a little bit more of what we can expect to see in Fantastic Beasts and where to find them. The first picture actually came from Empire magazine. It's just a picture of Newt standing out in front of a street. He's holding his Newt case, of course, and he's wearing his awesome little getup.
Sorry. Little getup.
I'm Southern sometimes.
It's amazing.
But I really like this picture especially if you go on our Twitter, you'll see the picture condensed. But if you go on Empire and see the whole picture, you can see the cars and what people are wearing and the whole street. And it just, you can tell they're really trying to get that feel of the 20s. And they, surprisingly in the picture, I noticed most everyone was wearing a lot of muted colors except for Newt. Mm-hmm. And like that one person in the background who's kind of wearing purple. So maybe...
Yeah, I'm wondering if the person in purple is going to be a real character.
Yeah, that's kind of what I was thinking too.
And also everybody seems to be gathered around looking either at Newt or at something in front of him. I'm wondering if it's some kind of wizard press conference or something. So
yeah.
Can anyone read the paper in his hand?
Oh, goodness.
I can like see letters.
We need that CSI fake whole Zoom thing.
Yeah, enhance. It's like, that's not how that works, but yeah, okay, go ahead. No, I can't read it. I keep trying to enhance, and it's blurry. It's not working.
Well, if any of our listeners have that magical tool and are able to read the paper, please send us along to it. Or even if you have theories of what the paper might say, that would be interesting.
You can kind of tell what it sort of says. It's three words. The first word ends in ing.
So there's an action.
All right. Do we think that this is outside the Makusa?
Funny enough, that's exactly where I thought it was. And I don't know if it's just because that's one of the only places that we really know about, or if just because the way the street kind of looks.
Mm-hmm.
That was just the impression I was getting.
If I look at this and think of modern day New York City, it kind of reminds me of Grand Central Station.
Mm.
But I don't know.
He does end up there, maybe. Doesn't he?
Yeah. I feel like we talked about that, where there's something that we know that is... Or actually, I think we were speculating about him doing something in Grand Central Station, I think.
Okay. Because I know at one point it was discussed. I just couldn't remember in what context, really. So the other picture we got was from Entertainment Weekly. And it shows Jacob, Newt, and Porpentina standing in what appears to be a hallway of some sort. Jacob's leading Newt and Tina. Newt's, of course, holding his Newt case. And Jacob kind of has this expression on his face. in my opinion, it's kind of funny because he looks kind of cartoonish. That I don't mean that in a mean way. I mean it in that his expression is so...
Mm-hmm.
It's a big expression.
With Newt and Tina, they kind of look concerned, but with him, he looks like, oh my gosh, like something's happening.
And it looks kind of like Newt might be holding him back.
Oh, yeah.
Like, don't go in yet.
I see what you're saying now. I initially didn't. I see, like, the hand.
He's sort of peering around a doorway.
Yeah.
Maybe
there's a
beast in there.
I would guess
there's
a beast inside.
Yeah.
Yeah, it looks like they don't really know what they're going to walk in on.
Maybe we'll see beasts in this movie.
Fantastic ones.
Gee.
And where to find them. That's where they found them.
The hallway looks to me like it could be in like a boarding house or some sort of like saloony hotel.
Yeah,
that's like if you think of a Western, those are the kind of hotels they had. Not that it's in the West, but you know, that's just sort of what I thought.
This is very East.
Yes. Quite east.
In the U.S. at least. Oh, that rhymed. sorry.
Porpentina is very brightly lit in this. Could her coat be the purple coat from the other picture?
I was just thinking
I'm
that.
I'm not sure.
I think it's a little bit light. Even with like really bright lighting, this is more of like a lilac color.
Yeah.
She could have more than one coat.
Blasphemy.
But that would make
That's
it
not
weird.
Possible. Maybe.
But that would make it weird that Newt's wearing the same thing.
Yeah.
Maybe.
Yeah.
Well, maybe Newt is like Doug, and he just like has a closet of all the same clothes.
So the Fantastic Beasts theme song will be do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do. Oh my gosh, can you imagine the whole beginning of the movie being in that cartoon version where... I used to do that as a kid. When Doug would come on, I'd go through the whole theme song and like all of the motions, like Doug when he like jumps through the hole and everything.
Oh, yeah.
We also have news. There was an interview with one of the wand designers on set who goes through the process of trying to create the wands for different characters. You can check out the article on MuggleNet under Fantastic Beast News. Basically just describes the different processes for such characters as Newt. and even Queenie and her Art Deco style wand. It's a really interesting read. I think it's interesting. Of course, they put so much work into each wand being different because each wand is. You kind of have to wonder how someone gets this job, because to me, that sounds pretty amazing.
Oh, God, yes. Yeah. I would love that job.
I know you would.
So cool. But they do make a bunch of those wands, though. They make like a ton, and I believe that they're cast resin, and they make just a ton of them because the actors use them and they snap them and they break them all the time. So each person, I mean, I can't even remember how many Daniel Radcliffe went through in HP.
Yeah.
They said that he just was breaking wands left and right.
It's like 600 or 60.
That's quite a gap there, Shane.
I would not be shocked if it were such a big number, though. That totally makes sense. And he's like, there are so many images and GIFs and videos or whatever of him just drumming with them when the camera's off. It's like,
yeah, well,
that's why. There you go.
That's what happened there.
I like how she says that, you know, the wand picks the wizard and it's a bit like people and their dogs.
Oh, yeah.
Like, the dog picks the human and also, you know, beasts. No, that's a thing.
And also, you can kind of tell a lot about a person by the type of dog that they have, so.
Yeah.
Well. And the type of wand that they have. Mm. Ma, 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 ma. Okay. looking at the image of, on the MuggleNet article, the image of each wand, they're also relatively large, which makes sense movie-wise, but I wonder what the actual length of each wand is going to be, because the length of your wand determines how, like, big and showy the magic is and how loud it is, and it's, like, for more outgoing personalities, like, that kind of stuff. Everything seems to be a little bit bigger, but also for film, things have to be larger anyway to show up on camera. So, I mean, it looks like Newt's wand is probably 13 or 14 inches long, but that's a gigantic wand in real life, or in real life Harry Potter lore. So what would it actually be?
Yeah, that is a good question to bring up, because if with Harry Potter, we of course get the exact measurements in the story, but with Newt, we only have so much of his story that we can't really know his exact wand measurements unless it was given to us in the Fantastic Beasts and Where to Find Them,
and
prologue or the epilogue.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I don't remember anything like that, but yeah.
Yeah, I don't remember seeing that either. So,
because I know I'd be freaking out about that by now. But
you have to wonder if that's exact.
What the?
If they just did stuff? It for the movie? No. I meant if they made the wand bigger for the movie, or if that would be accurate to Newt's character, regardless.
It's probably that they made it bigger for the movie, but it's not unheard of that if he has like a 13 or 14 inch wand prop, that he might have a 12 inch wand in his character lore. Like, it's not, you know, which is still a large or relatively large wand anyway. Also, it's hard to tell what the wood would be. Because in the Harry Potter movies, they don't at all stick to what the actual wood looks like, necessarily. Like, Harry's wand is supposed to be holly, but holly is actually pure white. It's a very, very fine, tight-grained wood. And so for his wand is actually, it's got the bark on it, and then it's like a medium brownish color. So it couldn't possibly be holly, like, as a prop, but, you know, so I'm curious to know what his wand looks like, because from the picture, it looks like it could be birch or something along those lines. I don't think it would be, it's not light enough to be pine, it's not red enough to be redwood or cherry or anything, so probably something along those lines, but it could literally be anything.
Yeah, I'm gonna...
All right, I'm done nerding.
No, that's okay. I was gonna say, this is a really good opportunity to segue into the listener comment, because it's about the wands.
So in the article, Sol says about designing Newt's wand, "We wanted it to relate somehow to the animal kingdom, but we thought it was sort of inappropriate to give him anything that might have a trophy feel to it. Mm. We didn't think he would be into that at all. The main part of this one is wood." And I think that relates to the listener comment we have.
Oh, of course. We got a lot of great listener comments on our episode last week. And if anybody wants to comment or theorize or has anything they just want to discuss, feel free to comment on our page.
So on the news post from last week, after we discussed, well, after you guys discussed the possibility of a vegan wand, DreamGalleon88 wrote, "On the subject of being a vegan in the wizarding world, I think the challenge of finding a wand would go way beyond eliminating animal use in the core. This was discussed in the podcast, but I was imagining even more barriers such as plants being used in the wand core instead. If Newt requested a wand that wasn't made with any part of an animal, then I'd guess that magical plants wouldn't be included in the specification. However, what about mandrakes, for example? Yes, they are considered a plant, but they still live and mostly scream, making it hard to define in the wizarding world what is alive and what is non-living. And J.K. Rowling has stated on Pottermore that although Ollivander believes the animal wand cores to be essential, he also attributes a large part of a wand's power to its specific wood. Upon further research, I found that apparently wizards hundreds of years ago used coral and dittany as wand cores, though this practice was extremely rare. Maybe Newt was bold, clever, or passionate enough to discover a way to craft a wand made only of a wood, perhaps similar to the Elder Wand in this respect, but not as powerful, that would work as well as other wands with animal cores. Yet Newt could have even retrieved a, quote, vegan wand from another wand maker that readers hadn't met before in the wizarding world that would specialize in crafting unique wands. This would be a neat plot twist in the upcoming film." Whenever you guys were talking about the way his wand looks and how it's bigger, I was kind of thinking about this, and I was wondering if the size of the wand would make it more powerful, like if having more magical material in it would make it a stronger wand. And if that's the case, then if Newt doesn't have any sort of animal or like living parts in his wand, that he would need a bigger one in order to, like, measure up to a wand that would have, like, a unicorn hair in it or something like that.
It's possible, but usually the length of the wood kind of more affects how loud and colorful things are, whereas a shorter wood is more, like, reliable and subtle, that kind of stuff. It's not usually power, but, of course, that depends on the core. But if there is no core, then I can see how that would make kind of sense. I mean, of course, we're playing in magic lore.
Like personality.
Yeah, it's usually more about personality. And also allegedly about height. It's not really about height, but then you've got Hagrid who has a 16 inch wand. So, you know. Actually, in reading this comment, the Elder Wand does have a core, I think. I thought it was thestral hair.
That's right. Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, which doesn't make this comment at all invalid. It's totally true. I like the mandrakes thing is very interesting because where do we draw a line in what is a creature and what's not a creature, even if it's a plant? So plus if you're using mandrake, it's like, wow, you've got babies in your wand. You just took a screaming baby and put it in a wand. So
I wonder if it's possible to use like multiple woods. Like, could the outside of the wand be one wood, and then could the core of the wand be another wood?
I don't see why not.
Could be magical?
I think that the...
Because that would be interesting.
Yeah, I don't know exactly which has the impact on the other. If the core is giving the magic ability, and the wood is giving the focus, but depending on which one is which, it could be... You know, it could totally work to have two different woods. But I didn't know about the dittany and the coral. That's really cool. And it could be
coral
that he actually has that.
Really cool.
I would totally have a coral wand.
You would.
Yeah, you would.
Because you're a mermaid.
It's totally not why. Why would you assume that? But if you have a coral wand, that kind of begs the question, would you have a kind of like sea creature or beast core?
I can see that.
Because I wonder if you could use like a mermaid hair or...
Well, they're saying the coral was used as the core.
Yeah.
Oh.
Yes.
But that would be amazing to have a wand made out of coral instead of wood.
I don't see why not.
Because that's what I would want. That's personally what I would order. Be like, look, Ollivander, we've got to make this a reality. Ollivander would agree with me. He'd be like, yeah, that would totally choose you. It's fine.
I like the idea of him going to Ollivander as a kid and getting a wand, and it's like, oh, how unusual. This wand doesn't have an animal hair core at all. You're probably going to be vegan later. And then he is.
Whoa, we got it right.
But is he a vegan because he chose to be, or a vegan because Ollivander told him that he had to be?
It's a prophecy.
Whoa. It's the vegan police.
Vegan police! No vegan diet, no vegan powers.
Oh, maybe Newt is so the much. Vegan police. Well, DreamGalleon88 brought up the question of mandrakes and whether or not they're alive or not, and I think that goes right along with our main discussion, which is going to be about the section of the Fantastic Beasts book where Newt talks about what is a beast. And so if you look at that section in your book, actually, it looks like Ron and Harry have written in a perfectly valid answer, which is big hairy thing with too many legs.
Oh.
So case closed, right? At the beginning of the what is a beast discussion, Newt brings up three kind of creatures: werewolves, centaurs, and trolls. So werewolves spend most of their times as humans, but once a month they turn into what you could call a beast that has no interest in human activity. And centaurs, they look human, they have intelligence, but they live in the wild and they don't really like muggles and wizards and stuff. And then trolls are humanoid, but they are not very smart and not magical. So the question is, are these three beasts, or are they beings?
I love how with trolls, it's like, you're too stupid. Like, you just can't.
So the first historical instance of someone trying to define a beast was Burdock Muldoon, who was chief of the Wizards' Council in the 14th century. And the Wizards' Council was what preceded the Ministry of Magic. And Burdock Muldoon said that a being is anything that walks on two legs. So that went horribly. The goblins ruined everything. Because the goblins went, okay, anything that walks on two legs. So they brought a bunch of creatures to this summit. It says, it has a little excerpt from A History of Magic, and it lists Diracals, Auguries, Foopers,
yeah,
pixies, fairies, trolls, hags who are trying to eat children.
Okay, and wait, hold on. If this is like a summit, why are kids there? That's the only thing I have a problem
with.
Well,
it says hags glided about the place in search of children.
Okay.
So I guess there aren't. So there weren't necessarily
children.
They
were unsuccessful.
Right.
Hopefully. Yeah.
That's good. So they learned their lesson. That beings are not just things that walk on two legs. And this reminded me of this kind of philosophy story I've heard. So Socrates defined man as featherless bipeds, featherless and walk on two legs. And Plato, who, you know, was a student of Socrates, would repeat this at his academy. And so Diogenes of Sinope, I don't know how to pronounce that, but he heard this and was like, featherless bipeds. So he got a chicken and plucked the chicken and brought it to Plato's academy and said, behold, I've brought you a man. And then Plato went, okay, featherless bipeds with broad, flat nails. So that's the definition of man.
Nailed it.
Yeah. I don't think that would apply to beasts and beings, though, because, I mean, trolls probably have broad, flat nails.
They also have boogers.
And yeah,
humans true. Don't have those.
That should have been part of his definition.
Yeah, boogers.
Those are most important.
The second time they tried to define beings was after Muldoon, and it was Madame Elfriga Clagg. And she said, beings are those who could speak the human tongue. And once again, goblins decided to ruin everything because they brought trolls that they had taught a few words to. Jarvies showed up, and it resembles an overgrown ferret, except for the fact that it can talk.
Nice.
What? That sounds
amazing.
That sounds
fantastic.
What's the definition of overgrown? Like, Like human size or like dog sized?
Just bigger than your average ferret?
I think gnome sized.
Wait, it gets even better. True conversation, however, is beyond the wit of the Jarvie, which tends to confine itself to short and often rude phrases in an almost constant stream. I think we'd get along just fine.
So you just teach it a bunch of swears.
I thought it said screamed for a second, and it was like, it's just screaming all the time.
It just screams curses.
So the Jarvies were there, then the ghosts showed up, and the ghosts had a real problem here because they felt like the council, they left in disgust at what they later termed the council's unashamed emphasis on the needs of the living as opposed to the wishes of the dead.
It makes me so sad.
And then the centaurs protested because the merpeople couldn't come, even though the merpeople can talk, but they can only talk in mermish above the water.
Uh-oh.
I like that the centaurs were like, hey, our buddies the merpeople can't come. Yeah. We're gonna protest. How cool of them. I know the centaurs don't have a lot of... Sometimes they get a lot of flack for how they were in the Harry Potter series. Some of the things that they did. Even though they mostly kept to themselves and they just didn't want to be involved in a lot. I think I can understand that. But for them to stick up for a fellow, quote, beast in that manner, I think is really, really cool. I wish we could see something like this. Although this was before... Newt's whole adventure into the Fantastic Beast world. So, I don't know. I just wanted to add that I liked that.
Well, centaurs and merpeople are both half stuff. Like, half top part human, bottom part something else. We should stick together.
When you said half stuff, in my mind, I thought right stuff. And I was like, oh.
Oh, gosh.
Half stuff. I'm sorry.
I just was curious why... The goblins keep ruining everything. they just make it their point to ruin these things. And I don't know if this was sort of the start of their beef with wizards, or if that was something that existed before it, and this is just part of them rebelling like they always do.
They're being some real Diogenes of Sinopes right now.
Maybe being little sarcastic jerks.
Maybe the goblins are just trolling the wizards. I'm sorry.
That's what they're doing.
I'll go outside now. I'm sorry.
Go break your internet again.
Before he got here.
Dobby must punish himself.
But I'm wondering if the goblins versus wizards situation is going to come to a head in the movie at all. Because, I mean, it obviously wouldn't be resolved because we know that it's still... exists in Harry's time,
yeah,
which is later, but it just is interesting that they're so involved in this history, I guess.
Yeah,
I wonder if like there's a Gringotts in America. Maybe Gringotts itself is in America.
I think that there is a Gringotts of America. I think that JK Rowling did mention that somewhere.
They have a New York branch.
I think there is one. I don't know where it is, but I thought that there was one.
Isn't that how Bill and Floor met, though? Was the Gringotts in Egypt? So there are different branches.
Yeah.
Yeah, so maybe they have to go to the bank and they run into some goblins.
Nice.
And the goblins are like, you're collecting beasts? Here's some trolls for you. Maybe the goblins open the case.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Because you almost have to wonder, are they just doing this for the sake of it? Or do they really have an agenda? Kind of like,
yeah.
Like,
are they just trying to be a pain in the butt? Or do they have something at stake?
I don't know.
Do they just want clarification? Oh, this is what you think is a human or a being? Here's how we're going to prove you
just
wrong.
Or maybe they're just annoyed that anyone's trying to make this division in the first place.
True.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think it's... Like, I don't know. It sounds like we're kind of demonizing a minority here. Like, oh, what are those goblins trying to do? It's like, I don't know. They're probably just
I would do the exact same thing as the goblins. Good for them.
Yeah.
Showing these ancient wizards what's up. Equal rights for Jarvies and trolls, I think, yes. Is what the goblins are rooting for here.
Oh my goodness.
So then, finally, they came up with a definition in 1811. The Minister for Magic, Grogan Stump, defined a being as any creature that has sufficient intelligence to understand the laws of the magical community and to bear part of the responsibility in shaping those laws. So it seems a little bit more of a vague definition. They questioned some trolls, and it specified without goblins present. And the trolls were then classified as beasts because they're dumb. And merpeople were classified as beings. They decided that acromantulas and manticores, even though they are capable of intelligent speech, they try to eat humans too much, so they are beasts. And then the Sphinx has intelligent speech, but it's only in riddles and puzzles, and then it will become violent, so it is a beast.
Gotcha. That makes sense. So it's anybody who is down to be chill with us and hang out and talk with us is a being, and anybody who wants to eat us eventually is, like, can screw off.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Down to chill.
Which I think so is fair.
But then what if... So if a human doesn't agree with magical laws and doesn't want to bear part of the responsibility in shaping them, what does that mean?
Well, it's sufficient intelligence to understand those and bear part of the responsibility. So it's like the capability of them being able to do it. So if they don't want to do it, they still have the capability of doing it. Whereas trolls just don't. They're dumb. They can get out.
And then I thought it was interesting, there was this short sentence that said, "We are all familiar with the extremists who campaign for the classification of muggles as beasts."
Ouch.
And I was like, no, I'm not familiar. Because Voldemort never said that.
That's fascinating.
So, he might have implied it.
I mean, I guess
he didn't campaign the muggles, for it.
The muggles
aren't familiar with laws of the magical community, but that is not their fault.
Yeah, I want to see these extremists. Yeah. I want to see this horrible group of people, because for the most part, we really don't know who the, quote, villain is going to be. And since Newt is trying to write this story, this guide of fantastic beasts, and there are actual witches and wizards out there who are trying to classify muggles as beasts, I would like to see him fight that. Mm-hmm. I want to see that kind of butting of heads and see how he addresses that, especially because I get the feeling, since he's hanging out with Jacob, that he's not opposed to muggles or no mages. So
even if it didn't come up in this movie, I'd be really interested for it to come up later.
Yeah.
But then it's interesting because it's like, well, obviously it's not like it is resolved and the muggles know about the magical community and all get along.
But didn't they, at some point in history, didn't they know about the magical community? And then there was some big war where they had to stop?
Yeah, I think, like, Middle Ages.
Okay.
Maybe. Wait, isn't the group the Second Salemers against witches and wizards?
Yeah, I think so.
So I would like to see these two groups interact.
That's how the movie's resolved. Newt just gets them in the same place and leaves.
Locks them all in a room.
You take care of yourselves. See who comes out alive. That is like Hunger Games meets Harry Potter.
Yeah, and then they release a beast on them, and it's just...
Oh,
dear.
That's a little dark.
That is a whole different series.
This is a family movie.
It's sort of interesting to note, though, like you said, that we know that the progress, the social progress that can be made in this movie, like, has very distinct limits, because we know where we pick up in the 90s. So we can't have surpassed where the world is when Harry Potter starts.
And that's, I mean, the, you know, edition of Fantastic Beasts that we have is obviously one that was published around Harry's day, so there must still be these extremists.
Yeah.
Because otherwise they would take that out of the introduction.
That's interesting.
Ooh.
So a couple more points. Centaurs refused the status of being.
Huh.
It just says, "We are all aware that the centaurs have refused being status and requested to remain beasts." It doesn't give, like, reasoning.
Oh, I have a little... It says, the centaurs objected to some of the creatures with whom they are asked to share being status, such as hags and vampires, and declared that they would manage their own affairs separately from wizards. A year later, the merpeople made the same request. The Ministry of Magic accepted their demands reluctantly. Although a centaur liaison office exists in the Beast Division of the Department for the Regulation and Control of Magical Creatures, no centaur has ever used it. Indeed, being sent to the centaur office has been an in-joke at the department, means that the person in question is shortly to be fired.
I think it makes perfect sense. Yeah,
that was a footnote.
Yeah.
That makes a ton of sense. It's just like, well, just because they have the capacity to understand magical law and all of that stuff, like, they don't want to be held responsible for it, so they're just
they don't want,
you know what, you guys do your thing, we're going to be over here, and we don't want being status because we don't want you to ever come to us with anything. You do your stuff and we'll handle our biz. Said the centaurs.
And I mean, that seems to work pretty well,
quote unquote. We'll handle our biz.
As far as we know, that works pretty well, because they still have, relatively good relations with the centaurs and merpeople.
Yeah.
They all seem okay. They coordinate with the merpeople for the Triwizard Tournament, trust them not to kill anybody, so...
Yeah, well, you say
I
that
feel like... I feel like that's Dumbledore, though.
Yeah.
Okay, the centaurs and the merpeople... But... They all get along with Dumbledore. They don't necessarily get along with everybody.
It's true.
Yeah.
For all we know, something changed in almost a century between the merpeople and, say, the merpeople that are on Hogwarts grounds. Maybe Dumbledore has a really good relationship with the merpeople that are in the Black Lake, but maybe it's not like that everywhere else, and so that's why, for the most part, the centaurs and the merpeople kind of deal with their own biz. And
Yep.
And maybe Dumbledore kind of reached out to the merpeople and the centaurs a little more, because they both are on Hogwarts property. They just tend to themselves in areas that are kind of forbidden by the students. And doesn't Dumbledore speak Mirmish anyway?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
He does.
Yeah. So for all we know, he actively sought out trying to make amends with at least the ones that he could when he became headmaster. And maybe that's something we could see if we do see an interaction between Newt and a younger Dumbledore, is their care for these fantastic beasts and kind of what Newt was trying to do, which was accomplish an understanding of them and more of a relationship, I guess, between the ones that are kind of like beings.
Yeah, I would love to see Newt interact with a centaur.
Oh, yeah.
That would be interesting.
Yeah. Well, and it's also, we're saying that they refused being status, but that doesn't mean that they've accepted a beast classification, does it? It just means that they're off by themselves doing their own thing. They're just not accepting the categories at all.
I guess that's true. I guess, so it's like, there's a centaur liaison office in the beast division, but it doesn't say centaurs win. No, classify us as beasts.
Right.
Well,
yeah. They were like, just don't want to be beings.
If wizards are going to classify them as beasts, it doesn't mean that they're going to classify themselves that way.
Yeah.
Well, in the book, Newt did classify centaurs and merpeople as beasts, but they have footnotes beside their MOM classifications, which kind of explain, like with the centaur, it says... Yeah, it's
sort of ambiguous.
Yeah, it's saying the centaur is given a quadruple X classification, not because it is unduly aggressive, but because it should be treated with great respect. The same applies to merpeople and unicorns. So even Newt added, it's not necessarily because, how I'm taking it is, it's not necessarily because they're beasts, with the way he adds that they're not aggressive. It's just that they should be respected. Which I really like.
So a couple more points. Ghosts asserted that it was insensitive to class them as beings when they were so clearly has-beens. Which is hilarious. So then the Minister for Magic created the three divisions of the Department for the Regulation and Control of Magical Creatures, which is the Beast Division, the Being Division, and the Spirit Division. So there's a whole division for ghosts.
Nice.
And then the other thing I had written down was werewolves there's still not really a good decision. So there is an office for werewolf support services at the Being Division, whereas the Werewolf Registry and Werewolf Capture Unit fall under the Beast Division.
Hmm.
So we still gotta fight for these werewolf rights.
I think a lot of that has to do with the stigma around them and how a lot of them don't really want to come out into the open. At least that's what I gathered from the series, that Lupin had a lot of trouble with that. And I think because it could have a lot to do with how they divided the divisions, even, because that's kind of, it's like, oh, you see me as half being and half beast, why can't you see me as all being? Because it would make more sense, in my opinion, to see it that way, despite the monthly change that they do go through. They do have the Wolf's Bane that prevents the whole change and kind of makes it like...
But I think that Wolf's Bane's a really hard potion, because I think really only Snape could make it for Lupin.
Yeah, just like very skilled potion masters.
Maybe that needs to be a ministry thing where they give them Wolf's Bane.
Yeah, if it should be like kind of like a medication and insurance will cover it. Like, we will give you this if you're willing to take it.
Well, that fits perfectly.
Because, it is a hard thing where...
Like, that fits perfectly with J.K. Rowling has said that Remus Lupin was supposed to be, like, an HIV metaphor. Like, lycanthropy and everything. Mm-hmm. And it's, you suffer the stigma. You are worried about infecting others. Everybody is, like, freaked out by you. And it's all about examining prejudice and... and so when you say like, oh, well, Wolfsbane potion, it's like, that's like taking drugs for HIV and stuff. It doesn't really stop it. It has a stigma. It's how effective is it? It's very taxing on your body and everything. It's like all this interesting stuff that totally fits. And especially when you mentioned the regulation by the ministry of, oh, well, then they should be able to get this stuff. It's like, well, then you're talking about healthcare. So.
Yeah.
Yeah. This might be off topic, but when you said that people were fighting for werewolf rights, it reminded me of House Elves and Spew and everything. And I think it's interesting that House Elves are of sufficient intelligence to understand the laws of the magical community and to bear part of the responsibility of those laws. And yet... most wizards would see them as beasts. I'm sorry.
Yeah, and they're still treated as, like, slaves.
And they're actually sometimes even more powerful than wizards.
Yeah, in certain situations.
Yeah, suck it, Lucius.
Yeah, and they...
Time to get out our
They must be classified. They must be classified as beings, because they're not in the book. And, I mean, they do have sufficient enough intelligence. But they are obviously treated as lesser beings.
Yeah.
And not even as much as goblins. So
being a being doesn't mean that you are treated with respect.
Yeah.
Because I would say, centaurs are probably treated with more respect than house elves.
I think it has a lot to do with fear as well, because house elves are so tiny and cute, and people are going to look at them and I think not be intimidated by one, despite how magical they are, because they can be so submissive. And with centaurs and merpeople, they refuse being status. They protest. They are very intimidating and human-sized. So I think that has a lot to do with... I think size might actually matter in this point. When you look at a centaur and a house elf, if you think, okay, which one would I rather fight? I think there's an obvious choice, even though it's not a fair choice, and it's not... exactly a right choice, because like I said, house elves can be very powerful, and like Dobby,
it could put you like a house elf could put you flat on your back, but it just won't.
Exactly, like it takes a lot of what most house elves don't exactly have. Like Dobby had it, he fought for what he wanted after he was free, and all the other house elves looked at him like he was crazy, because he was paid for his job and he wore clothes. And all the other house elves, they have a stigma too that they kind of stick to. I just think it's kind of you see something that's not usual for your group, and so you cast it aside, and everyone else in society then casts it aside, because you're in the group, you're part of it, and you're looking at this one, like, what they're doing is wrong, what they're doing is absolutely crazy. So I think they kind of set these rules for themselves. The Wizarding World then kept those rules for the House Elves, in a way. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
Woo! So much. So many thoughts on creatures that don't actually exist.
Allegedly.
Well, if no one has anything else to add, then let's leave the Beast Division and go downstairs to the Department of Mysteries, where they have obviously remade all of their time turners, and we're going to go back in time. Okay.
Is that the sound of going
back in
time?
Well, first we're just going back in time. Yes, that's exactly what it sounds like. I'm an expert. First, we're just going to go back in time a few days to a comment on MuggleNet.com again. And this is from Imogen. And they commented on our last episode and said, I was wondering whether Henry Harry Potter will get a mention slash cameo in Fantastic Beasts. He was, after all, quite high up in the Ministry of Magic and even a member of the Wizengamot during the time Newt was an intern at the Ministry. Although he was expelled from the Wizengamot at the time Fantastic Beasts is set, knowing J.K. Rowling, I can't help feel she'd want to slip in a few Easter egg references to Harry for us mega fans. I'm guessing she'd also love to shock and confuse many of the casual viewers at the mention of a Harry Potter. I would personally love to see or hear about him, since I found the Potter family feature on Pottermore so interesting. And then Felix Scamander responded, let's just hope he isn't called by his nickname, or the internet will think the boy who lived used Hermione's time turner to go back to 1926, which is a good point.
Valid.
So today I figured we could talk about Henry Potter and his possibility of being in the films, because he was alive at this time. So he is, of course, Harry's grandfather, mm-hmm. and he served on the Wizengamot from 1913 to 1921, and he very much disliked the Minister for Magic, who served as minister from 1912 to 1923, so is not the Minister of Magic that we would deal with in the films. In fact, I think there's another one for just like 2 years, and then a new one starts in 1926. That's a whole other discussion.
So wait, but he was around the Ministry of Magic around the same time as Newt, yeah?
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. He would have been working with the Ministry at the same time that Newt was, but the movie is taking place after all of that stuff. So Henry isn't on he's not in the Wizengamot at that time, right?
Yeah. But no, I just thought if they did,
he might still be working there.
Yeah. Because we were talking a bit last time how there could be possible flashbacks, and I think that could be something interesting. I would like to see that if they decided to, and give a little nod to, like Imogen said, the super fans.
Yeah, I think that if they were to do it, JK would say it's just a nod, it's just an Easter egg, and not have him be a big character or something, because I know that she kind of wants to distance this from Harry Potter itself.
And I think he would be called Henry Potter, not Harry Potter, because people would freak out too much.
Or maybe just Henry. If they just called him Henry, like, oh, hi, Henry. Didn't see you there, blah, blah, blah. You know.
Just a dude on a bus or something one day.
Yeah.
There's only one Henry in this universe at that time period.
So I thought it was interesting that Henry... So he condemned the Minister for Magic, Archer Evermond, because Archer stopped the magical community from intervening in World War I. And it says, this is from the Pottermore article, his outspokenness on the behalf of the Muggle community was also a strong contributing factor in the family's exclusion from the Sacred 28. So, you know, we were talking about Muggles earlier. Henry Potter really liked Muggles.
Mm.
So...
He would not
want to like keep them alive and stuff. That's nice.
Maybe there is going to be a whole undercurrent in this movie of Muggle rights and that kind of stuff. It would make sense.
Yeah. Especially, I mean, you have a Muggle main character.
Yeah.
Madge.
Oh, no Madge.
Who
sorry.
Finds out about the
community. I'm still not used to it.
Never. After over a decade of using the word Muggle, in a matter of months we're supposed to use the word no Madge, I don't think we'll quite get used to it. It's nothing against the word. It's just, it's hard. It's like when TV channels change their name and you're just supposed to get used to it.
Oh, so I like the idea of Newt and Henry being bros.
bros I before
that would be really fun.
Couldn't Henry be like a nice mentor?
Well, if he's his grandfather, yeah, I don't know how old. You have to take into consideration how old was he when he had James.
Yeah. Okay, I guess he's Harry's great-grandfather, not grandfather.
Okay, well then.
Because Henry had a son called Flemont.
There's that guy.
Flemont James Potter. Was just like a nickname for him. Flemont, a.k.a. And James.
Like yeah, the Marauders. I for sure changed my name too.
But Flemont was the one who created Sleakeasy's hair potion.
Yeah, that's why they're...
Nice.
And he married Euphemia.
Oh, man.
Classy.
Some interesting names in that generation. And then they went, you know what we should name our kid? James.
Let's make his life really easy. We'll be very rich. Yeah. We'll give him a simple name. Just let him ride through. And then he, you know, turns out to be a marauder.
Well, so for this week in the Newt case, we have the Thunderbird. The Thunderbird, you probably know it. You've seen it at a lot of totem poles. You know, it's usually in there. It's a widespread figure in Native American mythology, particularly among Midwestern Plains and Northwest Coast tribes. It's always described as a really big bird. Some say that it's big enough to carry a killer whale in its talons as an eagle would carry a fish. But, you know, not all of them, because that'd be, you know, that's huge. it's capable of creating storms and thunder. The clouds are pulled together by its wing beats. The sound of thunder is made by its wings clapping. Sheet lightning is the light flashing from its eyes when it blinks. And individual lightning bolts are made by glowing snakes that it carries in its talons. Also, most legends have the bird, they describe it as having really bright feathers. And some say they could remove the feathers like a blanket and take human form. So super interesting beast in American folklore. And there are some similarities in a lot of the, or in a couple of the beasts in the Fantastic Beasts book that we have.
So wait, you're telling me that a thunderbird can create thunder and storms? Because I did not see that one coming at all.
It is a pretty solid gnomer.
I'm more hung up on the fact that it carries glowing snakes. It just has these glowing snakes. Where did it get them?
Wait, well, what?
That's, it picked them up with the killer whales.
Obviously.
It's I'm gonna take some of these killer whales, some of these glowing snakes.
Because I've seen references to... I've seen references to the glowing snakes thing a couple times, and a lot of the legends say that its like main enemy is a horned snake, and there are a couple different horned snakes in American mythology and stuff, so it makes sense, but it's like, oh, so it's channeling the thunder through its enemy snake in its talon and making lightning bolts. It's very complicated. It's complicated. It's weird.
Snakes? I don't know no snakes.
I found something on Google. Amphisbaena is a mythological...
I feel like that's not right.
Probably not.
What? Spell it. I need to know.
It's Amphisbaena.
I only got the amphi part. Amphis... I'm just... Google, help me out here.
Just call it bae.
B-A-E-N-A. But it is... A mythological ant-eating serpent with a head at each end, and it says that sometimes it glows. It has many description of this amphisbena.
No, I don't know.
Its eyes glow like candles or lightning.
Why did I look up images?
So it's carrying a specific other creature.
According to Greek mythology, it was spawned from the blood that dripped from Medusa's head as Perseus flew over the Libyan desert.
Nope, forget it.
After which Cato's army then encountered it along with other serpents on the march, and it fed off the corpses that were left behind.
Good God.
So, rat. Yeah. I don't know if that's in any way helpful.
That's so metal. But
it's interesting.
Like, can you just tone it down a little? So much. It's too much.
This Thunderbird with the snakes is going to attack the room with the two... opposing teams that I mentioned earlier, I think. The anti-muggles and the anti-wizards, you know.
And so, then kaboom, Thunderbird.
We'll just put all of those in a room and call it a day.
It's a throwdown showdown.
I think I want to see this bird fight a phoenix.
No.
Well, oh, jeez.
Well, no, it's interesting.
Because if it won, that would be terrifying.
But what's interesting is that you've got the Thunderbird is supposed to control storms and lightning and stuff. And we've talked before about a creature that's going to be in the films, the Augury. And and its mournful cry is supposed to signal that it's about to rain, which is very similar to effectively calling a storm. So, like a kind of an appropriation of an American myth there.
That would be interesting if it was like, ah, yes, this augury is actually what you all call a thunderbird.
There is a 100% chance that it's already raining. I had to change the percentage because I'm like, well, they're working together here, so.
Yeah.
And, you know, if an augury and a thunderbird were the same thing, it would make sense for muggles to go, oh, it's you know, screaming or whatever, and then a storm comes, so it's calling the storm.
But
would
an augury still carry these snakes?
I don't know.
Augury does what it wants.
Augury maybe don't they care. Think,
maybe the augury's just eating snakes and the muggles, nomadges, are like, ah yes, those snakes are lightning bolts.
It's eating gummy worms and it's holding glow sticks and they're just really confused about...
Yeah.
Glowing snake.
I feel like the circumstances for it to get, like, gummy worms and glow sticks are, like, far more complicated than it just getting snakes.
It likes to rage, okay? Gosh. I just want it to be...
That's what I do. That's what I do when I rage. Glow sticks
like
and
an
gummy worms
party.
All the way.
I'm just trying to make it far less violent than it actually is, okay? Not everyone likes violence.
Aaron, I think what you just said should be the title.
Oh, no,
Ain't
Shannon.
No party like an augury party?
Ah, no.
You missed out, Shannon.
Wait,
you missed
it.
Slide jobs. Pop-Tarts.
You don't have to listen to me. I'm just the rotating host.
Biscuits and Pop-Tarts.
I still haven't made a Les Mis reference.
Or Hamilton, or... whatever.
Okay, we still haven't talked about the last bit here about how thunderbirds might be able to remove their feathers like a blanket and take human form.
I still haven't eaten my Cracker
Barrel.
Well,
that is terrifying.
What if like a villain in the movies at the end of the movie turned out to be a thunderbird?
Whoa. Oh my god.
Like is a beast.
I don't know what I'll do with myself.
Okay, M. Night Shyamalan.
Right?
We've been fighting the beast this whole time.
It was a beast all along.
That's so meta.
I love it.
That would be can you just see like so, okay,
I and mean, then he puts sunglasses
on. It'd be gross. But I'm like, someone just like, I don't know, I guess, do they put their feathers back on? I guess so. So they'd like slip
They're
back
just
into
like,
a
hold
bird
on.
Suit. That's
Excuse
like,
me
okay,
for a
that
moment.
Part isn't very cool looking in my head.
It's like
but then
man.
They just like spread their wings and thunder crackles and it's like, haha. And they're like, this human is crazy. They just put on a bird suit.
I'm sorry, but that was not nefarious at all. Haha, I did it. In your face. Well, that wraps it up for just the third episode of Speak Beastie.
Is that all?
It feels like we've been doing this for years, guys.
Thanks.
Aaron, but I'm just saying, Aaron almost didn't make it today because he broke his entire internet.
And then I fixed the entire internet.
He fixed it.
He did.
IT crowd would be proud. What is with me rhyming today? Okay, so if you have any comments or news stories or fantastic theories, just send them in to us. You can email, you can check out our post and comment there, whatever you feel like doing. I would also really love to thank Megan for joining us today.
Thanks. Anytime.
That's the plan.
You can find us on Twitter and Instagram at SpeakBeastie, on Facebook at facebook.com/SpeakBeastie, Tumblr at SpeakBeastiePodcast.tumblr.com. We also have a new Audioboom channel, which is audioboom.com/channel/SpeakBeastie. And please subscribe to us on iTunes and leave us a review if you can. That really helps us out. I'm Megan.
I'm still Shannon.
I'm always Ariel.
And I will continue to be Aaron. Case closed. Thank you.
They do have those clothes that change colors based on, like, sweat and stuff, right? Is that... No.
What?
Maybe. I don't know. That sounds kind of awful, though.
If you're wearing a white shirt and you sweat, it becomes, like, see-through? Oh. Is that what you're talking about?
Oh, no. I feel like this is one of those things that either I made up or I dreamt about, and now I'm just going to sound like an idiot, but... I swear that was a thing, and like
that
somebody
sounds like it could be a thing.
But that sounds so gross.
No, because somebody was like wearing
gross.
A shirt. I know, but I think somebody was wearing a shirt, and I saw a picture, and it was all discolored because they were sweating.
Why do you want people to know that you're sweating?
Yeah, exactly. That person's shirt is a different color. They must have really worked for it.
I'm gonna sound so stupid, but I think it was like water activated. I don't think it was like sweat activated.
See, that I think is a thing.
Oh gosh, I'm crying. I'm just an idiot today. Don't mind me.
Ariel, you're not an idiot.
There's shirts that
no, it's
when
a million
the sun,
dollar idea.
When they're in the sunlight, they change color.
Let people That's know when you're too. Sweating. I just created the worst idea. One of them, at least. No one's going to wear that. No one's going to be like, yeah, I'm sweating. Look at my shirt to find out.
So.
Oh. Well.
When you sweat, it just like it, like an image appears on your shirt. It's like, do you even lift, bruh?
Oh, gross.